everybody, and welcome in. It is a Wednesday. That means it's time for Supernatural News and Parashare. By the way, we need your Parashare story, so it's just Supernatural News today. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Right over there is the co-hostess with the mostest. I'm trying to remember what the other nickname we had for you was, but it's Mally Fox.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember now.
Hi, Mally.
Hello.
Do you remember what I see? I'm going to say the Beast from the East, and you're going to throw something at me from Michigan and hit me square between the eyes.
It was something to do with the Midwest, though. I thought we came up with something with Midwest.
Yeah, it was. I'll have to go back into the archives and figure out what that was. Because if I use Beast from the East one more time, you're going to end up hitting me with a tire iron in the shin like Jeff Galooly. Boy, there's a dated reference, huh? We're getting closer to the Olympics, so every once in a while, you got to pull out one of those dated references.
Mm-hmm.
So all the kids out there are like, Jeff, a who?
Look at I feel it. Like a lot of things I reference, kids under, anybody under 40 is like, what?
Yeah, a what? A Tonya Harding? A Jeff Galooly? A hit who in the shin with what? Yeah. Got a big show today, Mally. You know, it's not, for once, it's not too AI heavy. For once, it's
Oh, thank God.
I mean, there's a couple stories in there, but not anything too gloom and doom heavy, although it's a very weird show today. We got a little smattering of everything for you today. I tell you what, let's just jump into it right away today. Let's talk about British soldiers recovering a non-human UFO that crashed in a secret operation.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just get right into the thick of things today. Frank Milburn, who, by the way, has been on this program.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got to get a hold of Frank and see if we can't get him back on the program to talk more. He is a member of the British Army's elite parachute regiment, said the craft crashed in the north of England and was retrieved in a secret operation in the 1980s. You know, I had the pleasure of talking with Frank for about an hour and a half before an interview. And mm-hmm. He is such a treasure trove of information. I got to get him back on this program, Mally. He has information, secret information about the Royals.
Oh.
He was a bodyguard for the Royals for a while.
Okay.
He was British Special Forces for a while and has all kinds of interesting UFO information. The man is a treasure trove of information. But British Special Forces soldiers recovered a non-human UFO that crashed in the north of England, according to ex-para and military intelligence officer Frank Milburn. He was a member of the British Army's elite parachute regiment and said the craft was retrieved in a secret operation in the 1980s. Its presence has never been revealed in any public release documents in the past 30 years, however. Frank spoke out after U.S. intelligence whistleblower David Grush claimed officials had recovered debris and alien biologics from 10 crashed UFOs. He said boffins had, I love that word, by the way, boffins, had been secretly tasked with reverse engineering ET technology in a bid to give the U.S. an advantage in the global arms race. Frank said his information came from a member of a secret MI6 run unit known as the Increment, which conducted the operation. Very interesting. Now known as E Squadron, it recruits the most experienced and reliable operators from the UK's Special Forces Unit, the Special Air Services, or SAS, Special Boat Services, SBS, and Special Reconnaissance Regiment, or SRR, and take part in covert, clandestine, and paramilitary operations. They'd been told by the RAF that a craft which wasn't Russian, British, or American had been downed, Milburn said. He said that they were tasked to secure and retrieve the craft in the north of England. They were flown in by helicopter. They established a cordon, a perimeter, and they approached the craft. He didn't describe the craft. He just said it was obvious that it was non-human, and it was obvious that they had been occupants. I don't know if that meant they saw seats inside or they found a dead alien or whatever it was. I don't know, he went on to say. He said it was obvious that the occupants had basically gone off along the ground. Then it was a case of securing the craft and recovering those occupants to take them into custody. Part of the unit was left protecting the craft. They would have left maybe 6 to 8 blokes to cordon the craft, he said. and the others would have been on foot, quad bikes, or 4x4s trying to track down these entities that escaped from it with helicopters supporting. He said after that it was totally passed over. He said scientists and technicians came in and was completely out of our hands. We were flown back and away by helicopter, and we knew nothing more after that. So in other words, no information after that. They were just flown in, done their job, and gone.
Mm.
Frank said when his comrade, who fought in the 1982 Falklands War, refused to tell him any more, including the precise location or description of the craft, he did not push him as he was not mainly or majorly into UFOs. But after the U.S. launched a probe into dozens of close encounters between Top Gun pilots and mystery craft, often near nuclear bases or weapon sites, he recalled the conversation. This guy says he was involved in a crash retrieval in the UK, Frank told the Good Trouble show on YouTube. This is one of the most capable guys I've ever met, he went on to say. I know the guy's not a bullshitter, he went on to say, and I know people who know him. I can validate him. This thing really put the zap on his head at the time. This guy was not fazed by anything. But this was, without a doubt, the most extraordinary thing that has ever happened to him in his life, apart from surviving contact with the enemy. This was otherworldly or outerworldly stuff, Frank went on to say. He got to the point where he wanted to tell it to somebody. I believe him 100%. That means something. I'll tell you, after having talked to Frank, that really does mean something. He says, I worked with the bloke in Civvy Street. This is a true blue paratrooper. I spoke to former SAS and paratrooper mates of his. He says, we're talking about a guy who fought bravely in the Falklands in some of the most brutal engagements. This is not the kind of guy who Fs around or talks shit, as he went on to say. Mm-hmm. Frank worked in British military intelligence until the late 90s, then as a contractor in Iraq alongside U.S. Army Special Forces and the U.S. State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security. He is now an analyst for the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies, an Israeli university think tank with close ties to Israeli military intelligence, where he has written public research papers on the U.S. government's approach to UFOs. His comrade became like a brother. He says he told me one night because he was sick of keeping this big story bottled up, but knew he couldn't tell anyone who wasn't ex-Special Forces. A declassified 2000 UK Defense Intelligence staff report said the existence of unexplained aerial phenomena, UAPs or UFOs, was indisputable, credited with the ability to hover, land, take off, accelerate to exceptional velocities, and vanish. They can reportedly alter their direction of flight suddenly and clearly and can exhibit aerodynamic characteristics well beyond those of any known aircraft or missile, either manned or unmanned, the report said. Attempts by other nations to intercept the unexplained objects, which can clearly change positions faster than an aircraft, have reportedly already caused fatalities, a report warned, adding that no attempt should be made to outmaneuver a UAP during interception. But the report denied any incursions by UFOs into UK airspace and added that no artifacts of unknown or unexplained origin have been reported or handed to the UK authorities. The Ministry of Defense in Britain said they were not aware of any salvage operations with materials or unexplained origin. I tell you, Mal, I got to get Frank back on the program because with the Arrow report that came out recently, about 2 weeks ago now, with the complete denial of anything UFO-based and saying that it was just swamp gas, the same old excuses that we got, Frank is really a treasure trove of anything having to do with UFOs. And being that he works so tightly with both the U.S. and Israeli governments and is on the, it's a good way of putting it, kind of on the precipice of everything defense related, I really think he really does have his ear to the ground and knows what's going on behind the scenes. He's really one of those precious sources where you can kind of mill some of that information without getting too close to the source and being in too much trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, what country reports the most UFO sightings? Is it England?
It is England right now. England is pretty open with the stuff that they report. The There's one other, the other country that is pretty open right now is, let's see, it's Britain is number one. And then the other mm-hmm. one, gosh, I want to say is, well, it's not the U.S. anymore. It was the U.S. for a while.
Is it Mexico?
Mexico is pretty out there right now with reports too. A lot of European countries right now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the EU pretty much mm-hmm. is the the combined EU. And then there's not a lot coming out of the Russian-based countries, obviously, mm-hmm. right now. Although there's a lot of reports coming out of the war-torn countries right now.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of soldiers are reporting seeing UFOs in a lot of the war-torn areas, which is interesting. And you could...
That would be interesting, like, during, like, the World Wars or, you know, any type of war, if there's an increase in sightings of UFOs, if that's an attraction to them.
Oh, it has been, which is, I mean, it's very fascinating. We've read a few stories about it, but, and it's not the explained stuff, like, for example, you may think it's a mortar, or you may think mm-hmm. it's some sort of surface-to-air rocket, or anything like that. It's not anything like that, or a satellite, or something that you think is easily explained. It's nothing mm-hmm. to that effect. It definitely is your typical UFO. And, mm-hmm. You hear about things like UFOs or aliens coming along wanting to disable, like missile silos, things like that. If these UFOs really do want to disable us as we're escalating in wars or as things are getting worse, I got to think that maybe something is going on where they're catching worse and worse acts happening in the process of war mm-hmm. where they're realizing that things are escalating and they simply want to stop it. Mm. I don't know. Or they want to get involved and stop it, one or the other.
Right.
You know, it's interesting stuff. You know, it's an interesting theory. That's for sure. But how they know that is escalating, I don't know. Mm. You know, you hear about maybe they have telepathic abilities. Maybe they, maybe
they could walk amongst us.
That's true. Maybe they have little spies. I don't know, Mal. You bring up a scary possibilities,
Not scarier than AI.
Well, that's true. We'll get to that soon enough, I guess. Oh, sure.
Stuff makes me not be able to sleep.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to do that. Well, at least you're not dating one,
Yeah, that's true.
That's the scariest of all, I guess. Let's look at the lighter side of things. Celebrities who are enamored with aliens.
Okay.
You know, we talk about Robbie Williams every once in a while on this show.
He's funny.
Yeah, he is. He thinks that aliens are targeting him because he's so famous and can help them.
I think there's more famous people out there, but
Well, over in England, I guess he's quite the
right.
What's the word I'm looking for? Hot shit? Is that what I'm looking for? Robbie Williams has had his fair share of extraterrestrial encounters and has now speculated that maybe he's meant to have had these experiences because he's a high profile figure. God, talk about being stuck on yourself. Mm-hmm. Robbie believes that aliens are deliberately targeting him to be a messenger for them on Earth because of his fame. I can think of bigger people they could go to, mm-hmm. But
well, Robbie's, maybe the aliens are big, because wasn't he with that, was it Take That or Take Five or Take Something?
Yeah, Take
The Boy Band.
Take It to the Bank. I don't know, something like that. Yeah.
So maybe they're huge fans and they just want to.
Maybe. The 50-year-old singer, yes, they're looking for the washed-up boy band singer to get their message out there.
What if all the boy bands disappeared because they were abducted? Ooh, that's the next movie that we should make.
Maybe that's the way they fray their vocal cords is to go through the anus.
Ooh.
Ooh. You never know. The 50-year-old singer has had several close encounters of the third kind, previously revealing he once saw a UFO so close to him that he could have hit it with a tennis ball. I question how he hits UFOs now. Wouldn't you just throw it? Yeah, I mean, you could hit it with a cricket bat. You could, mm-hmm. you could throw a baseball at it.
I just remember the story of him where, you remember MTV Cribs?
Yes.
Once again, this is dating us. Mm-hmm. But he did an episode, mm-hmm. and you're at his mansion, but it turns out it wasn't his. It was Jane Seymour's mansion, but he claimed it as his own.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was kind of a fraud from the beginning, wasn't he? On another occasion, when he was writing the song Arizona, wasn't that a Glenn Campbell hit?
Oh, I know he's remade some other people's songs, so maybe.
He wrote the song Arizona about alien contact. A gold ball of light visited the studio when the music was playing. Probably to shut it off, is my guess. Robbie is convinced that extraterrestrials keep coming to him because they want him to use his pop star status to tell the world the truth is out there. He said, I sometimes think and I try to separate narcissism and ego, unsuccessfully a lot of the time.
At least he's honest.
Yeah,
he admits it.
Yeah, at least he's humble about it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of different theories that we all have to do with this stuff. But I often wonder if I'm supposed to see it because of my public platform. It's shrinking. I don't know how to tell him that. Am I supposed to see this so I can talk about it? He asks the question. Robbie lives in Beverly Hills.
Oh, he's moved.
Yeah, they can keep him, by the way. And his wife, Ida Field, and their four kids, Teddy, who's 11, Charlie, 9, Coco, 5, and 3-year-old Bo, all of which have asked to be relocated into the Witness Protection Program.
Oh, he's entertaining.
I guess.
I think he claimed he had sex with a ghost. I think he's one of the celebrities that did.
Is he? Really?
I think. I might be wrong, but I thought so.
I don't think you are on that. The Angels hitmaker. Do you remember the song Angels that he
yes.
did? Okay. Has had the majority of his alien encounters in L.A. Why did they come all the way to L.A. when he was in England at one time? Maybe they enjoy the weather?
Yeah, possibly.
I guess. And he feels, though, the American city, where he has lived on and off for almost 15 years, is a magnet for visitors from other worlds.
Yeah, I'll say.
Why is it ever?
L.A. is weird.
He said, for some reason, I feel closer to the woo-woo in Los Angeles than I do in England. Probably because mm-hmm. they have their head on straight in England. Mm. Yeah. I had a house in Wiltshire, he says. The grounds in the house were 1,000 years old, and you would think that there I would be inundated with specters or door slamming. Other people experienced it. I didn't, he said. It's not until I go to Los Angeles, where I live or lived for a while, that it's like there are vortexes there. It's vortices, not vortexes.
Ah.
Just correcting Robbie on his English, even though he's English. He says it's a very strange land. Documenting the UFO visit to his recording studio back in 2008, he previously said, I just written a song called Arizona. It's all about alien contact, and I was playing that. I stood on the balcony and there was a big ball of gold light that turned up. We thought it was Venus or Mars or something initially. Then the song stopped playing and it disappears. But then we put Arizona on again and the big ball turned back up. It happened 4 times. After that, a massive electrical storm started and these 2 big massive balls of light started dancing in the sky. It was like a whole light show for about an hour. Hmm. Interesting.
Well... Gotta love them.
And then the mushrooms wore off. No.
Yeah. No, it was helicopters with searchlights.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking for like a carjacking or something.
Yeah, and then the helicopters went away and all was well. So there you go.
Oh, he keeps us entertained.
That's right. You know, Mel, there is a solar eclipse coming on the 8th.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, a lot of people are excited about it. Some people are a little concerned about it. I'm going to go doom and gloom on the deal because our old friends at CERN are back.
Oh.
And they're planning on doing a little particle accelerator action on the 8th. They've decided to use the solar eclipse to search for invisible matter that secretly powers our universe. That's right. They're firing up the old Large Hadron Collider and seeing if they can't get some action going and looking for these invisible particles. The world's largest and most powerful particle accelerator is set to smash protons together on April 8th to search for invisible. Why can't I say it, Mal? Are set to search for invisible particles to secretly power our universe. At least that's what they do. Theories have suggested that there are 17 different particle groups in the European Organization for Nuclear Research, better known as CERN, confirmed the existence of one using its Large Hadron Collider in 2012. Now the team has restarted the LHC in hopes of unraveling more mysteries of the universe, specifically dark matter. Scientists began preliminary tests by sending billions of protons around the LHC's ring of superconducting magnets to boosting their energy and ensuring the $4 billion machine was in working condition. So they're firing it up, Mally. Takes a little bit, but it gets there. It's a little old, you know. Next month, CERN will shoot them down a 17-mile-long tunnel at nearly the speed of light to recreate conditions a second after the Big Bang. This always scares the hell out of me.
I know. I think they should just leave it alone. Retire it. Don't take it out of commission.
The LHC will continue the experiment until later this year, when it will then be put under a long hibernation for CERN to transform it into the next version, which is the high-luminosity LHC. The accelerator sits 300 feet underground at the border of France and Switzerland and first went live on September 10th of 2008. If you believe conspiracy theorists, Mal, that was the first time the timeline jumped.
Oh.
Was when they used this LHC and they first smashed atoms together, smashed particles together. They believe that the universe changed at that point, or timelines changed when they made particles collide. They think it created an alternate timeline. That's just a theory.
Right. But if that theory is true, they need to leave it alone.
That's right. The LHC works by smashing protons together to break them apart and discover the subatomic particles that exist inside them and how they interact. Scientists turned on the powerful machine this month, injecting it with several proton beams. CERN researchers use protons due to them being heavier particles. The weight allows them lower energy loss per turn through the accelerator than other particles like photon. On March 8th, teams from around the world waited inside the underground lab for a glimpse at the beams circling inside the ring of the LHC. The circular shape was by design, as it allows for more time to accelerate the beam of particles so higher energy can be reached. But the first attempt this month did not go as planned after the beam only made it partially around. But this month's experiments proved the beam trajectory was off, as it did complete a full circle. But after tinkering with the mechanics, the team watched in wonder as the beam circled the accelerator in less than 20 minutes. At full power, trillions of protons will race around the LHC accelerator ring 11,245 times a second and travel just 7 miles per hour, less than the speed of light. Imagine that. And then bang, and then we're all gone. I kind of like the doom and gloom every once in a while, just to kind of scare you guys. On April 8th, the team will send the beams through the tunnel where they will collide. The team will be on the hunt for dark matter, which makes up around 28% of our massive universe, but it has never been seen or proven. This work will give them insights into the formation of the universe and even its ultimate fate. The experiment is set to occur the same day as the Great North American Solar Eclipse. The total solar occurs when the moon completely blocks the face of the sun, briefly turning the outdoors dark during the daytime. The spectacle will be visible to an estimated 32 million people along a narrow path through North and Central America. It will mark the first total solar eclipse being seen in the U.S. since August of 2017. So how are we celebrating the total eclipse? Are we going to try to bend our neck as far as we can to kiss or ask goodbye? Or how are we doing this, Mally? I'm confused.
Wake up with a little prayer that everything That's will right. be okay.
That's right. That's all we can do, right? I don't know. Is there a little fear there? A lot of fear? A little bit, lot bit? What do you think?
I think a tiny bit, yeah. But you can't live in fear.
That's true. By the way, just a side note, there's a new $20 billion accelerator that's going to kick on in the 2040s. That bothers me too.
Knock this stuff off.
Yeah, I know, right? They should just knock this stuff off. So, a $20 billion accelerator. So they're gonna build it bigger and better. It's kind of like, how big can the roller coaster get before you kill people?
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. I that just makes me nervous. Okay, so with that, we're gonna take our break. When we come back, Mel, it's time for more Nightmare Fuel, and then we'll get into other supernatural and paranormal stuff. When we come back, the Nightmare Fuel involves a brand new supercomputer that's trained to advance AI. That's right, advance it further than what we are now. And of course, we've got the old evil partners in crime getting together to do it. Microsoft and OpenAI is involved in this whole deal. Also in Nightmare Fuel news, someone made an AI clone that knows all of the naughty secrets and helps a woman connect with her fans. That's right. We're getting bow chicka wow wow in Nightmare Fuel today because we have to. You have to balance a little bit in Nightmare Fuel. That's all. We're talking ghosts today. We got a couple of scary ghost stories for you today as well. We're also going to talk a little cryptid news today. And we talk Havana Syndrome today, Mally. Listener sent me a story about Havana Syndrome, which we'll talk about, interestingly enough. So we've got that on tap as well. And to top it off today, to end the program today, we're going back in time. Got to get back in time. And we'll talk about how woolly mammoths just won't stay in the past. That's coming up as well. You're listening to Supernatural News. And by the way, we need your parishare stories. Send them in, tim@darknessradio.com, or go to darknessradioshow.com and leave us your voice note. You got 2 minutes to do so. But when we come back, AI, ghosts, cryptids, and woolly mammoths, oh my, it's all coming up next on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Right over there is the co-hostess with the mostest. That's Mally Fox. Mally, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath in and blow it out. Feel that cleansing breath. Do you feel it? Namaste. Do you feel the peaceful, relaxing? Can you hear the birds chirping outside, Mally? Do you feel that? Do you feel the universe coming together? Do you feel the richness of the world? Do you feel Mother Earth embracing you, holding you, and saying, Mally, do you feel my loving embrace? Well, it's too late, Mally! It's time for Nightmare Fuel! Is that shocking enough for you?
Yeah. The anticipation.
Yeah, sorry, Ed. Got to think of new ways to introduce the segment, I'm just saying.
Does anybody else like this? Yeah, I feel like I'm the only one that does not like AI stories.
Actually, I get a lot of them per week from people. They love the intro of this segment. I don't know what. I think they just look forward to the intro of the segment. They love my paranoia. I don't know what it is. They love to see me cower in a corner, and eventually they want to see me peel back my scalp in horror. Just tear the flesh off my own body in sheer terror. I don't know. It's no secret that OpenAI and its chief financier, Microsoft, are charging ahead in a bid to make AI the next big thing in computing and make it the reason you don't sleep at night. But a new scoop put a new dollar figure on exactly how deep that commitment runs, citing unnamed sources familiar with the project. The information, that's the name of the reporter, is reporting that the dynamic duo is working on a $100 billion, that's billion with a B, meaning a sum exceeding many countries' gross domestic products, on a hush-hush supercomputer designed to train powerful new AI. OpenAI didn't respond to Quartz's request for comment about the facility, reportedly codenamed Stargate. Oh, great. It's named Stargate. And scheduled to go online in 2028, but Microsoft didn't push back against the reporting in a statement it provided. Here's what the evil empire had to say. Microsoft has demonstrated its ability to build pioneering AI infrastructure used to train and deploy the world's leading AI models, a Microsoft spokesperson told the site as it tittered and guffawed in the background. We are always planning for the next generation of infrastructure innovations needed to continue pushing the frontier of AI capability, and we bow in our master's direction. No, they didn't say that last part. I added that. That's needless to say, that's a mammoth investment. As such, it shines an even brighter spotlight on looming questions for the still nascent AI industry. How's the whole thing, rather, going to pay for itself? Or how's the whole thing going to pay for itself? Well, our AI overlords are basically going to take over the banks. No, we're kidding. No, that's not going to happen. So far, most companies in the space, Microsoft and OpenAI included, have offered significant AI services for free, by the way, sometimes with a more advanced upsell version like OpenAI's ChatGPT Plus. It's certainly possible that a few winners will emerge with that subscription model, since many people already cough up comparable monthly sums for services like streaming video, but it's harder to imagine a freemium keeping a particularly broad industry afloat, and even OpenAI already seems concerned about keeping costs down, as evidenced by its tooth-and-nail fight to avoid paying for training data. And a fresh $100 billion commitment, never mind the staggering power and upkeep costs for such a facility, won't do anything to reduce that pressure. So in other words, if you want the latest in AI, chances are you're going to be forking over cash for it. Mm. Yeah, especially at $100 billion price tag.
Right.
Especially if you're a fan of that stuff.
Nope.
My guess is, if you're wanting a sexy AI clone, you're going to be paying for that as well. Especially if you're a fan of Abigail Ratchford. I don't even know who that is.
But I don't either.
No. The headline is, I made AI clone that knows all my naughty secrets. It helps me connect with my fans.
Oh, is she an OnlyFans lady?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Abigail Ratchford from the good old US of A is known for her jaw-dropping looks and sexy curves, Mal. Now the bombshell model revealed how she created her own AI clone. That's just creepy. It's no secret artificial intelligence has become increasingly popular over the past couple of years, and with the sex industry constantly evolving, one model revealed her unique way of connecting with her fans. That's right, it's probably not her. You're getting it on with a robot. Abigail Ratchford loves being there for her admirers, but not that much. You get to talk to her robot. But since it's difficult to speak to each and every one of her subscribers, she created her own AI model. That's right. You're getting funky with Robbie. Not only does it look like her, it even knows her naughty secrets. Well, that's just creepy. You're getting it on with a robot. Now, speaking exclusively with the Daily Star, the beauty from the U.S. explained how creating an AI clone of herself was a no-brainer. She said, for the past 10 years, I've built my career in the digital space and on social media. And one important factor has been keeping a pulse on my fans' interests. That's just creepy, Mally.
You know what? There was a movie a long time ago where it was sex workers, where they did like the website. So you would have your viewers.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, like the computer started to take over. So your viewers were thinking it was you, but it wasn't. It was the computer, but it was doing all the movements. It looked like you, all that stuff. And then it was slowly like killing off the real person.
Yeah. I just find something cold and creepy about it. It's just me. AI has taken the world by storm, she went on to say, and I think it's safe to say it's here to stay. Creating an AI clone of myself was a no-brainer since I'm constantly finding ways to connect with fans. That's not...
Yeah, but you're not connecting with
fans. No, you're not. That's not you.
Mm-mm. If so anything, what is she doing? Just like sitting back having some tea and crumpets? I don't understand. What is she doing if the AI is doing all the work?
Yeah, just having a cup of tea and watching the action, I guess.
Yeah.
Watching her soaps. I don't know.
Playing online poker.
Yeah. She said, my clone can have romantic or spicy conversations via voice notes, or she can have naughty one-on-one phone calls. She's brilliant fun.
Mm.
Yeah, but then what are you doing?
I don't
doing?
Think the fans would like that if they knew.
No, they'd be cheated, wouldn't they? I mean, mm-hmm. They're paying hard-earned money for what? For anything they can get anywhere.
Yeah.
Making a clone of myself who knows all my traits, mannerisms, and naughty secrets is an amazing way for my fans to feel like they can access me 24/7, even when the real me might be asleep. Hmm. Abigail created the clone with the help of Foxy AI. She spent months going back and forth with her creators to try and form the perfect model. She added, the Foxy AI team who worked with my clone are perfectionists. They are meticulous with every detail, and it paid off with how identical my clone is to me in every way. If you check out my AI clone, you will see she is exactly like me personality-wise and in looks, too. I don't know, is this her or is this her clone? I can't tell.
Yeah, I don't know. From afar, she kind of looks like Megan Fox, but I don't have my glasses on.
Yeah, she does look like Megan Fox, that's for sure. Speaking about her AI, Abigail revealed how she had been approached by several companies to create her own model, but none of them caught her interest. She set up multiple virtual calls and meetings with Foxy AI so they could study her mannerisms and quirks. Now it made her AI personal and organic, but it's a machine. They really care about the quality of my clone, and that makes me even more excited and passionate to share my clone with the world, she concluded. And my own AI clone speaks in over 30 languages, so fans from all around the world can enjoy flirting and getting naughty with her. And I'll just go to the ball game. I don't know. That just seems weird. It seems weird to me. I did have a friend of mine try to tell me, well, no, it's not as weird as you think. No, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. I don't get it.
I agree.
To me, I don't get it. Because to me, isn't that kind of a personal thing?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't it be a personal thing?
It should be. And if you're spending all that money.
Yeah, right. I mean, if the money's coming out of your pocket, it should be. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm looking at it from too personal of a standpoint. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I work hard for my money, right?
We're old fashioned. We want the real deal.
I guess, right? Yeah, we want the real deal, not a machine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Things are just becoming too automated.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess. I want the ice cream to be real ice cream. I don't want Dippin' Dots.
Ooh, I do like Dippin' Dots, though.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I'll choose ice cream, normal ice cream, Dippin' Dots, but I like Dippin' Dots.
Okay, rate them in this order. Ice cream, ice milk, Dippin' Dots.
I'm not a big fan of ice milk, so really? Probably ice cream, Dippin' Dots, ice milk.
Interesting.
Wait, ice cream, yeah. Really? Yeah, ice milk is weird.
So you're not a big fan of the Dairy Queen?
Is that ice milk?
Yes, it's ice milk.
Even the Blizzards?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Well, then we'll switch that then. I was thinking of ice milk like when you sometimes get those bars that they say they're ice milk and it's like dipped in fudge.
Yeah, like Dilly Bars?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dilly Bars are ice milk as well, but Blizzards are ice milk as well.
Oh, yeah, but I put so much stuff in that, you can't even tell. But I love my Blizzards.
Yeah, I do too. I load it up with fudge and caramel and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yep, and just turn it upside down and make sure it doesn't come out. We're good to go.
But see, that's the trick. That's how they make ice milk thicker, is they put all that junk in it.
Mm,
yeah.
I like that junk.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. We're not helping anybody's waistline with this. That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't help. Well, Abigail's AI wouldn't be affected by it, but Abigail would be. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Bring it full circle. Let's move on, Mel. We got some ghost stories here that we can get into here. I know the ghost waistline aren't affected by ice milk. I could tell you that much. A woman shares freaky security footage of a ghost removing a dog's collar. This is an interesting story. A woman has shared the moment she captured sinister footage of her home cameras as she thinks a ghost took her dog's collar off. And people call it the most convincing evidence of ghosts yet. No matter how much of a skeptic you are about ghosts, sometimes you can't deny eerie footage showing evidence of unexplained movements. This was the case of one woman who has freaked people out with the most convincing evidence of a ghost ever as she captured footage in her home. She took to TikTok to share one sinister video as she told people to watch the black dog. It came as she was rewatching some security footage of her dogs back in 2021 when she spotted what she reckoned was a ghost taking off her dog's collar. The spooky video has now convinced people ghosts do exist as the ghosts bark at each other and then abruptly stop and whimper. In the post, she wrote, "Sorry for the obnoxious barking at the beginning of this video. Watch my black dog. Ghost take off her collar in her crate. You can see her two dogs, both in separate crates. They're barking at each other, and they continue to do this nonstop until about 25 seconds into the footage, when the animal falls completely quiet and stands alert for some time. The black dog, which is in the cage on the right, starts whimpering and suddenly rears back into the cage as far as it can when its collar randomly falls off. This is what convinced its owner that there was a ghost, and she says she's not the only one that thinks it. Since being posted, the video has racked up more than 1 million likes and thousands of comments from people who say it's a ghost too. One person said, I've never seen such a convincing ghost video. Another wrote, they both got super quiet. They felt the energy. A third commented, the silence was unsettling, while another wrote, something that messes with the dogs doesn't sit right with me. Others suggested that the collar got caught on one of the bars of the metal crate, causing it to come loose. They said collar was stuck on the crate. When the dog turns its head, it unbuckled. The dog got startled at the collar unbuckling and jumped back. Come on, people. I love a good skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only thing that would make sense besides a ghost, which I believe in, is the collar was too tight, says one user. The dog turns its neck and made it snap off. Dog gets scared and jumps back. But not everyone was convinced as the dog was nowhere near the sides of the crate for it to be stuck on anything. It's an interesting video, Mel. I'll give it that. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, we'll post this story in the description of the video or in the description of the show. So you can get an idea and look for yourself. I don't know. I see what people are saying.
Mm-hmm.
I see why they think that maybe this got tangled up in the bars of the cage.
Because it's like a belt buckle thing, right? It's right. Not the snap ones for the collar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now those can easily come, not easily, but they can come undone.
Yeah, exactly. So it's we'll leave it up to you. You check out the story for yourself in the description of this program. Click on the link and you tell us. You tell us. If you have a different opinion or you think so, you can send us an email, tim@darknessradio.com. We can discuss it. Here's another bit of a ghost story, Mally. You've been to Vegas before, right?
Yep.
You ever thought that maybe you've had the ghost of someone in your room, or maybe you felt the ghost of an entertainer at one of the venues?
Nope, just drunk girls.
Ah, yes, the ghost of drunk girls all over the strip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen those plenty of times. They were all over the place when I was there in 2019. Yeah. Evidently, according to this story, Elvis Presley haunts a Las Vegas venue that he performed at and communicates with his brother.
Think he would haunt Graceland rather than a casino.
I would think so, too. If you remember, especially this last Elvis movie with, what's his name, Austin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think of his name right now, but... he played the International Hotel. If you remember right, Colonel Tom had him nailed down to that contract at the International.
Yeah, that guy was crooked.
Yeah, and he had him locked into a long-term contract there. And at the time, Elvis was quite drugged up, and he wasn't... Mm-hmm. I mean, he was kind of miserable. Now, if you believe the soul splinter theory, there might be a part of Elvis's lower self or that residue that might be there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
According to his stepbrother, Elvis's spirit haunts the International there in Vegas. David Stanley said his ghost is active at the former International Hotel, where he enjoyed a 70s residency. David, who was employed as Elvis's bodyguard until his 1977 death, was speaking at his intimate one-man show at the Westgate in Las Vegas. I think it's kind of sad that his stepbrother has a one-man show.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, "I live in a lovely suite here, and I sometimes say out loud, 'Elvis, what is going on, man? Talk to me, goose.'" That's a little sad, too. One time I said it, the light came on. I got up and I turned the switch off. I tried again. "Elvis, come on, show me." And it turned back on, he went on to say. So that stuff happened a lot. I feel his presence and an energy like the spirit of Elvis is here at the Westgate, Stanley went on to say.
I mean, it could be a residual haunting. Where it's almost like a tape recorder, you know what I mean? How it just plays.
I guess. You don't believe Elvis's stepbrother, that Elvis is still around at the International?
No, I'm not believing his stepbrother. I think that, well, unfortunately, Elvis, I think, supported a lot of people financially, mm-hmm. and his stepbrother was probably one of them and is living off of that memory.
I think so, too, yeah. I think so as well. Let's move on. We've talked Bigfoot in the past in the UK. There's an idea that the UK and the UK's version of Bigfoot may be bordering on extinction. But there have been quite a few stories lately that Bigfoot is showing up in the UK and a little more frequently. There's fears that UK's own Bigfoot is stalking a national park with a huge clue that the growling creature can't be human. Britain's very own Bigfoot may be roaming one of their national parks, says a terrified local. Fishermen making a late-night visit to an idyllic lake in South Downs have revealed that a growling creature patrols the area and has been spotted escaping down a dangerous hill. No human would dare venture the incline, with anglers concluding the strange noises and bumps in the night are the result of an elusive creature. Members of the Cryptid and Paranormal Investigations group on Facebook observed multiple instances of close calls with a creature so evil that it made the fishermen up sticks and depart straight away. I think that means they picked up their fishing poles and ran.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm just doing translations here.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Brown claimed, "I felt incredibly on edge, and it was a feeling I can honestly say I had never experienced before or since. It really was as if something was watching me, and I was not welcome." Fellow group member Michael Brindle says he experienced a similar feeling when fishing on the banks of the UK's national park, adding he encountered something large running on what I think was two legs on the opposite bank in the darkness. Why are you fishing in the dark?
Isn't that a song?
It is. Little River Band, yeah. These unnerving stomps in the wilderness prompted Michael to pack up and scarper after he felt the hairs on my arms stand up. That's quotes. "I was dozing on my chair next to the rods when I was woken by a loud growl from the opposite bank," he went on to say. The pair noted that the growling beast had made its way to and from the area from such a steep incline that no human would dare to tackle it without risk of serious injury. Mike said, "I think, though, the most standout thing is the terrain being covered in the dark. It sounds dangerous enough to attempt in the daylight, let alone in the dark, when you can't see any obvious signs of torchlight. That's the real scary part, because no human could do it without suffering injury. While neither man says or saw the creature, they remain convinced that it was not a prank or a woodland creature. I hope to never hear it again," Michael went on to say. Interesting. So Bigfoot may be on an upswing there in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. We have another story here, another cryptid story. This time, another sighting in Loch Ness of the Loch Ness Monster. This one having to do with social media users claiming that a British tourist has captured the Loch Ness Monster in a photograph that has gone viral online. Nessie is probably Scotland's most famous legend, and the mythical water beast brings Nessie spotters in from all corners of the globe. The story of the mythical creature dates back to St. Columba in the 6th century, with sightings becoming more frequent with new technology, meaning Anyone with a phone can take a photo while watching from the side of the lock. Steve Chalice was visiting the historic site from Southampton while on holiday during 2019. He visited Urquhart Castle with his brother on the banks of Loch Ness and noticed a sort of ripple in the water. He took photos of the opposite shore while he thought he was catching a glimpse of a large fish and straight away got his camera out. Steve had forgotten about the incident, but then began looking through photos from the two-week trip during the first lockdown of 2020. He told the Daily Record, "I started taking a couple of shots, then this big fish came to the surface and then went back down again. It only appeared in one shot, and to be honest, that was something of a fluke. I watched for a while, as you can see from the last picture, but didn't see it again. After finding the snap of the creature, which he believed to have been around 8 feet long, he shared the photo online. The post was inundated with comments from social media users who were convinced that Steve had seen Nessie. However, the aspiring photographer thinks it might have simply been an enormous catfish or seal and only shared the photo to help with the identification process." Steve said, "Personally, I know there has been some interest and some people are saying that it's the monster, but I don't believe that. I have to say, I don't believe in the Loch Ness Monster, and frankly, I think if anything is there, then there is a logical explanation for most of the sightings. My guess would be that what I captured was a catfish or something like that. As seals get in from the sea, then I expect that's what it is, and that would explain why these sightings are so few and far between." Roland Watson, who runs the Loch Ness Mystery blog, had spoken to Steve after seeing the snaps online. Roland said, "If this is a genuine picture of a creature in Loch Ness, it would easily rank in the top three of all time. At this point, I am in an ongoing conversation with Steve as to the objections and concerns I have about this being a Photoshop picture, so we'll see where that takes us." A digital photography expert was also skeptical about the image, saying that the photo appears altered due to the color saturation and indistinct lining of the supposed animal in the main picture. Steve, however, has defended his images, stating that they are genuine. He said, "There are pics on Google showing large monsters with lots of loops, like a snake or something, and my image is nothing like that. I genuinely think to this day that it's just a big fish." So interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. Let's see here. We're down to the last few stories here on Supernatural News for today. I had a listener send in this story. By the way, if you have a story for us here for Supernatural News, you can send it to tim@darknessradio.com. We'd love to get your submissions for Supernatural News. We talked about Havana Syndrome a few times over the last couple of years here on Supernatural News. And of course, if you're unfamiliar with Havana Syndrome, a lot of people believe that it is generated either by spy agencies. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge report maybe about a year ago on 60 Minutes about how different spy agencies are using Havana Syndrome to get back at their own people or at other agencies. Potential spies from other agencies. There are people in our own CIA that claim that they're being tortured by Russia using Havana Syndrome, that they're being cooked from the inside by their own routers, their own internet routers. And it's being done by Russian operatives, things like that. The illness was first reported in Cuba in 2016, which is unusual now. Now, this story that I was sent, and actually what's interesting is there was a story that I didn't report on a couple weeks ago. I kind of let it go because it was kind of a nothing burger. Mm-hmm. The government had reported that victims that they had of Havana Syndrome within our own government from the CIA that they had examined, they found that there was no permanent brain damage as a result of Havana Syndrome. So essentially they had... So it was a big nothing burger. It was basically another government report. But I got this. I think it was from Jim. I got this story. It said, Florida car chase in 2020 may be linked to Havana Syndrome, according to this report. So a high-speed chase in Florida may be linked to the mysterious phenomenon known as Havana Syndrome, according to a new report. U.S. and Canadian embassy staff first reported the condition in Cuba in 2016. It was later reported by hundreds of American personnel in multiple countries. A promotional clip of a story from CBS News' 60 Minutes is set to air later on Sunday and shows body cam footage of police chasing a car down a highway in Key West in June of 2020. The chase goes on for 15 miles with the driver topping speeds of 110 miles an hour. Eventually, he's pulled over and apprehended. Inside the man's car, officers found bank account notes and a device resembling a walkie-talkie that can erase a car's computer data, including its GPS history. That's incredibly fascinating. Officers also found a Russian passport. The suspect gives his name is Vitaly and says he's from St. Petersburg.
Okay.
Interesting. When asked why he fled from police officers, he repeatedly says, "I don't know." The report comes weeks after the release of nearly 5 years of study from the National Institutes of Health, which found no explanation for the mysterious health problems, including headaches, balance problems, and difficulties with thinking and sleep that have been reported by U.S. diplomats and other government employees. The NIH conducted an array of advanced tests but found no brain injuries or degeneration. NIH did appear to contradict some earlier findings that raised the specter of brain injuries in people experiencing what the State Department now calls anomalous health incidents. Sophisticated MRI scans detected no significant differences in brain volume, structure, or white matter, signs of injury or degeneration when Havana syndrome patients were compared to healthy government workers with similar jobs, including some in the same embassy. That's what I was referring to earlier. Nor were there significant differences in cognitive or other tests that, according to findings published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, while that couldn't rule out some transient injury when symptoms began, researchers said that was good news that they couldn't spot long-term markers on brain scans that are typical after trauma or stroke. Sunday's report is the latest episode in an ongoing saga to unravel a mystery that began when personnel at the U.S. Embassy in Cuba began seeking medical care for hearing loss or ear ringing after reporting sudden weird noises. Early on, there was concern that Russia or other countries may have used some form of directed energy to attack Americans. But last year, U.S. intelligence agencies said there was no sign a foreign adversary was involved and that most cases appeared to have different causes, from undiagnosed illnesses to environmental factors. The NIH study, which began in 2018 and included more than 80 Havana syndrome patients, wasn't designed to examine the likelihood of some weapon or other trigger for Havana syndrome symptoms. Chan said the findings don't contradict the intelligence agency conclusions. Now, Frank Milburn, who we were talking about earlier, Mally, with the UFO story, also had some interesting stuff to say about Havana syndrome in, when we interviewed him about a year or two ago. And he's huge into that as well. He has a ton of information about Havana syndrome. I encourage you guys to go back into the archive and look for Frank. When we had talked about that, and he and I talked about it off air, he said, you know, there's a lot of plausible deniability when it comes to Havana syndrome, because although they know about it behind the scenes and they know how it's transmitted, it's hard to go after a specific spy agency and say, we know you're doing it, this is how you're doing it, because it is so slippery as to how they transmit these different microwaves. And essentially, that's how they do it. It is microwave technology. But it's transmitted through different things, routers, little ray guns, things like that. And it's mobile technology. So you and I can be sitting here, Mel. And I could be talking to you and trying to transmit whatever information I'm trying to get to you. And another spy can come by and maybe wants to get to me. And they can do it very easily. They can plant a chip in my router. They can hit me with mobile technology. They can drive by in a van and they can hit me with a microwave gun. Or they can plant a microwave chip in my router. They can use any microwave type technology and hit me with it and make me feel ill. And it's just fascinating stuff.
So now do we have to live off the grid?
Now, see, this is mainly spy games between from spy to spy. It's a lot of CIA operatives and people who work for the CIA and the FBI who are getting hit with this stuff. It's not regular citizens. However, this technology can be used on regular citizens. It's not too far from or too much of a step to the left to think that this stuff couldn't be used on regular citizens. Mm-hmm. You know, right now it's being used from country to country. So it's Russia using it on United States operatives. But think about it. I mean, it's, you know, how soon could it be that Russia and China don't start using it on American citizens?
Mm-hmm.
Or America decides they want to start using it on Russian and China operatives. It's scary stuff because it's invisible. You know, you're sitting in your home and all of a sudden you're ill, you're throwing up, you're dizzy, you can't get your, you know, you've got vertigo, you feel like you're burning from the inside. Things like that. It's the unseen enemy is the scariest of all. For those of you who aren't familiar with Havana syndrome, I encourage you to look it up. It's some of the most scary symptoms, and just to be hit from out of nowhere. Havana syndrome, when you follow that rabbit hole, is just some of the scariest stuff ever. And to see how it's employed and where it's employed is some of the scariest stuff ever. And I keep telling people, I mean, you know, the conspiracy theory thing is, if you take it in small doses, is healthy. If you go down that rabbit hole and get lost, it's unhealthy. You have to know what's a healthy amount of being able to handle. But the Havana syndrome stuff, boy, it gets scary. It really does.
This has not been a happy-go-lucky show.
No, I'm sorry, but I'm about to pull up here. I'm about to pull up here.
Geez Louise.
We're gonna lighten it up.
Lock myself in the house. Turn off all the electronics. Sit there with a tinfoil hat.
You may need that for the Havana syndrome stuff. Wear a tinfoil hat. Start thinking Tin Man. Make a little funnel hat and wear it around the house. Tell Derek it's a fun, sexy accessory you're wearing now from now
start
on.
Start growing my old vegetables in the backyard.
Yes. Yeah, you might want to do that as well. Yeah. Yeah. Nitrate free, by the way. If you're gonna do
yeah.
That. Yeah. Ooh. Do it nitrate free. Just for your health. I'm just saying. Let's move on, Mel.
Please.
Are you getting a little scared, Mel? Is that the deal?
This is just not a.
I'll make it a little better for you. How's that?
Okay.
A gold miner found a fully mummified baby woolly mammoth in the Yukon.
Okay, that's cute.
Yeah. Here, I got a little picture for you. See? Look at that. Oh, little baby Yukon. We'll name him
it's
baby
a little
Yukon.
Baby.
Oh, look at the baby mammoth. Look at it. Oh. He is kind of cute. I mean, for, you know, being mummified and all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, little baby Yukon is what we'll call him. In June of 2022, it was revealed that a gold miner had come across the mummified remains of a baby woolly mammoth. The discovery, which was announced by the government of Canada's Yukon Territory, was made on, oh my gosh, I can't pronounce that. I believe it is Trondek-Huechen? In traditional territory in the Klondike gold fields. You can address your emails to tim@darknessradio.com and say, that was horrible, because I don't know how to pronounce that. The remains of the infant woolly mammoth were found while miners were excavating the permafrost on Eureka Creek south of Dawson City. Travis Mundry initially believed he'd unearthed a mummified baby buffalo, but upon noticing the trunk, he knew he'd dug up something much more special and rare. He subsequently alerted his boss, Brian McCoffin, who ordered that all work be stopped. The miner then began reaching out to experts. His notices reached the right people, and it wasn't long before the Ice Age specimen was excavated from the site, wrapped in a tarp, and transported to a nearby spot, where a ceremony was performed by the elders from that tribe that I can't pronounce.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah. The same elders granted the mummified mammoth the name of Nuncho Ga, translating to big animal baby. They could have just called him Yukon, but we'll go with Big Animal Baby. While it's common for Ice Age era fossils to be found in the Yukon, it's rare for a fully mummified specimen with hair and skin to be unearthed, which is why this particular discovery garnered so much attention. Nunchoga is the most complete mummified mammoth to have ever been unearthed in North America, and only the second infant in the world to be discovered. Believed to be female, she's believed to have strayed from her mother while grazing in the grass and gotten stuck in the permafrost during a storm, believed to be about 30,000 to 35,000 years ago. Measuring 140 centimeters, she was likely only just, well, it's kind of sad, Mally, 1 month old at the time of her
death. Aww.
Yeah. In a statement released immediately after the discovery, the Minister of Tourism and Culture, Ranj Pillai, now the premier, said the Yukon has always been an internationally renowned leader for Ice Age research. We are thrilled about this significant discovery of a mummified woolly mammoth calf, Nunchoga. Without strong partnerships between placer miners, I'm not going to pronounce the name again because I screwed it up, and the Yukon government, discoveries like this could not happen. Oh, I'm going to give it a try again. Trondek Huechen Chief Roberta Joseph added, and I apologize, Chief, this is a remarkable discovery for our First Nation, and we look forward to collaborating with the Yukon government in the next steps in the process for moving forward with these remains in a way that honors our traditions, culture, and laws. We are thankful for the elders who have been guiding us so far and the name that they provided. We are committed to respectfully handling Nunchoga as she has chosen us now to reveal herself to us all. So there you go. Look at that. It says that almost 2 years after she was first discovered, the mummified remains of Nunchoga were transported to the Canadian Conservation Institute in Ottawa, Ontario, where they'll be preserved. Once the work is complete, she'll be returned to Dawson City. Interesting. So there you go. I got one final note here, Mally. One final note before we leave people today. And it's just a cautionary tale. You ready for this? It's a cautionary tale before you leave you today. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to remain positive in today's society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just call it a wink and a nudge and a nod.
Okay.
I'll just read the story. It's a think before you leap story, Mally.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Be careful how you leave negative reviews.
Okay.
Okay, let me tell you a little story. Sit around Uncle Timmy's lap as I tell you this story about a Nigerian woman who reviewed some tomato puree online, and now she's facing jail, kids. Jail. Ooh. For a negative review. Keep that in mind the next time you review a certain paranormal podcast. Let's just say. So leave a nice 5-star review for your paranormal podcast, or else you might face jail. Just saying. We go to Nigeria, where a Nigerian woman who wrote an online review of a can of tomato puree is facing imprisonment after its manufacturer accused her of making a malicious allegation that damaged its business, Mally.
Oh.
Ah, see? You got to be careful, kids, what you leave in a review. See?
Defamation.
That's right. You got to be careful. A 39-year-old entrepreneur from Lagos, Chiomi Okoli, is being prosecuted and sued in civil court for allegedly breaching the country's cybercrime laws in a case that has gripped the West African nation and sparked protests by locals who believe she's being persecuted for exercising her right to free speech. Okoli, a small-scale importer of children's wear, told CNN that on September 17th, she asked her 18,000 followers on Facebook to share her opinions about a tomato puree she bought in place of her usual brands, saying she found it too sweet. Not like NWO too sweet, but she found it too sweet, right? Her post accompanied by a photo of an open can of Nagiko tomato mix produced by local company Oresco Foods Limited sparked varied reactions from commenters. One of whom replied, "Stop spoiling my brother's product. If you don't like it, use another one, then bring it to social media or call the customer service." Okay, fair enough. Akoli responded, help me advise your brother to stop killing people with his product. Yesterday was my first time of using it, and it's pure sugar. Now, I doubt it's pure sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You got to be careful what you write. A week later, on September 24th, she was arrested.
Oh.
Yeah. In legal filings seen by CNN, the Nigerian police force alleged that Akoli used her Facebook account with the intention of instigating people against Erisco Foods. Adding in a statement on March 7th, it had unearthed compelling evidence against her from its preliminary investigations. According to the police, Akoli was charged with instigating Erisco Foods Limited, knowing the said information to be false under Section 24.1B of Nigeria's Cybercrime Prohibition Act. I'm not saying we live in Nigeria, Mally. Mm-hmm. Not at all. I'm just saying, be careful what you say about people.
Right.
Right?
I think too many people go to social media to complain rather than just behind the scenes deal with the issue.
Right. Or just bringing it to the manufacturer and saying, I don't like what you do.
Right.
Maybe you could change it a little bit.
Instead of saying you're killing people.
Yeah, instead of saying you're killing people. Or it's horrible. Or, you know, you're terrible. Or you're a bad person. You know?
Right.
Maybe you should email the manufacturer directly or email the person doing that particular product and say, hey, maybe if you did this differently, it'd be a better product.
Mm-hmm.
Be a good person. Be an outstanding person, right?
Mm-hmm.
See? Just saying. Now, if found guilty, she could face up to 3 years in jail or a fine of 7 million naira, which is around $5,000 or both. Nigeria is teaching Akoli a lesson. I think it's a good law.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
Well, and plus companies have more money than the average person, so they can afford the lawyers and all that stuff.
They can, but I'm just saying that you think people would be a little more careful with their reviews if they, you know.
They can destroy businesses, especially that I don't like Yelp, and you always see negative
Yes.
comments on Yelp.
Mm-hmm. There's not a constructive review. It's always, you know, people go and use reviews as some sort of, it's like they're wielding a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't ever use it for, I mean, you either see a great review, like they're pouring praise on a review, which is great. We love 5-star reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're using it as a weapon. There's never constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
I love constructive criticism. Like, yeah, you know, this isn't my cup of tea. If they did this, this, and this better, I'd like the show. Great. Give me constructive criticism. But I don't know. I kind of like this story. Now, one of the things about this story that I liked, it's the case is pending in a court of competent jurisdiction, it says. Now, they are demanding a public apology. I can see getting off these charges if there was a public apology and an amended review. That would work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Why not? Agreeing to apologize publicly to Erisco was a condition of her release on bail, she said. But her lawyer told CNN she agreed to do this under duress and therefore did not apologize after her release.
Ugh.
What's so wrong about apologizing?
Mm-hmm.
The first court hearing took place on December 7th. She was represented by her lawyer but did not attend in person. Akoli told CNN a month later on January 9th that police entered her Lagos home and attempted to arrest her despite a restraining order issued by the court on November 8th, barring her arrest without a court order. CNN had a copy of the restraining order. They stayed in my building from 6:30 a.m. until 5:30 at night. Her children couldn't go to school that day, and we couldn't go out to get food because the cooking gas was finished, she said. There was a countersuit against the police and the food company filed by her. It went on for a while. And they say that everything in the end was hard to prove and that there was a limited freedom of speech defense. Well, but see, there's somewhat of an amount of damage done to a business, too, when you give it a bad review. Now, in all fairness, you do have freedom of speech.
Right.
And you can say what you're entitled to say. If you don't like something, you're entitled to say it. If you don't like something, fine, say it. But also be constructive. You can't say egregious things. Like with this, she said, well, your tomato paste is full of sugar. It tasted like sugar. Well, but you have to be able to prove that. The burden of proof is on you.
Right. It's just her opinion.
That's your opinion. That's right. Now, if you give constructive criticism, what can you do to make it better? Then that's fine. That's a perfectly fine review.
Mm-hmm.
A perfectly fine review is, I found the tomato paste to be too sweet. If you would have done this, this, and this different, I find it would have been a better product. That's a great review. That's a perfectly good review. But to say things to blatantly damage the business is not a good review. So anyways, I belabored the point, but I just thought that was an interesting story to end our day. Look at Mally's like, I'm being quiet.
No, you're smiling like you wish you could do that to people.
I'm just saying, it's just something I've wanted to say for quite a while. As one who's been review bombed in the past for no reason, I just find it an interesting story. Put it that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's like those reviews where people give a review like on a show or a book or whatever, and they've never seen the show or listened to the show or read the book.
Yep.
But they give a bad review, almost like they jump on the bandwagon.
Yep. And that's happened a lot too. Yep. Let's just say people who listened on the old regime and haven't listened lately and done the same. Yep. But that's what it is. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I step off my soapbox, Mally, and ask you, what's new in Paranormal Girl Land?
You know what? I actually got mentioned in a book.
Did you?
Yes. I just got it in the mail, and I'm very excited.
What book is that?
It's called Women in the Fringe, Groundbreaking Women in the Paranormal.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. So there's a little blurb about me.
Who writes that book? Who's the author?
It was Marie Jones, Nicole Strickland, and Denise, I think it's Agnew?
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's a bunch of ladies in the paranormal world. And just kind of how we got involved, what our beliefs are, blah, blah, blah.
Is that brand new? Is that just out?
Yeah, I just got it less than a week ago.
Interesting. We'll have to reach out to the ladies and see if we can get them on the show.
Yeah.
That's
kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most definitely. Yeah, yeah. It's been a while since I've talked to that crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, good reason to bring them on.
Yeah.
Great, great, great. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Congratulations on that. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, I was pretty excited.
Yeah, yeah, as you should be. As you should be. That's great. That's great. Well, another notch in your belt, my dear. There you go.
I know. I'm excited.
You should be. You should be. That's great. That's great. I have nothing except for I'm up at KNSI Radio this weekend. So, listen to me blabber about snow falling on the ground yet in April, I guess. As Prince said, it snows in April. And it's snowing right now, as a matter of fact, as we
talk. Oh, is it?
Yeah, sometimes it snows in April. Mm. That's about it on my front. Tomorrow on the big show, Seth Breedlove will be here. And we are talking about American Werewolves 2.
Oh.
Yeah. If you haven't caught it yet, it will be out. Actually, I believe it's out on DVD right now at the Small Town Monsters website. It's available on DVD and on other formats, I believe streaming as well. We'll talk tomorrow about the movie. It deals a lot with Dogman. It deals with skinwalkers, and it deals with upright canines. In the Four Corners area, New Mexico, Colorado, that area of desert. Boy, Mally, I watched it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It is terrifying. You want to talk?
And where can you watch it?
It's available right now on DVD and streaming off of the Small Town Monsters website.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was terrifying?
Oh. You know, Seth Breedlove is an amazing filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get chills very often for watching these movies, but he's really, he's something else when it comes to these films. And he's got this timing, and he's got a way of doing things, the way he puts films together, that just, he knows how to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And he does it with, of course, he's got eyewitness accounts in there. But he's something else, I tell you. So we've got Seth Breedlove on the big show tomorrow, and we'll be talking about American Werewolves 2.
So, very cool.
Yeah, so that's the big show tomorrow. Actually got the crew from Small Town Monsters on twice this month. So
okay.
There's a couple different projects out there. So yeah, excited to have them on this month. So big stuff from them this month. So lots of good stuff this month on Darkness Radio. So excited about that. So
yay.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff this month. So that'll do it for today. From Allie Fox, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for listening today. If you have a guest you want to hear from us, email me, tim@darknessradio.com, as well as your Parashare experiences. You can either send us a voice note by going to darknessradioshow.com. Click on the blue button. You got 2 minutes to file your story. If you need another 2 minutes, click on the blue button. Rinse, repeat. You know the drill. Or send me an email, tim@darknessradio.com. We would like your experiences there. We may have another small podcast coming out on our newly formed network now.
Ooh, very cool.
Yeah, that may be coming very soon. Lots of good stuff on the horizon. Keep your eyes peeled to darknessradioshow.com and to our social media for new and exciting things coming out relatively soon. Again, from Allie Fox, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for listening to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.